On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, the Nets suffer another defeat, this time at the hands of the Indiana Pacers. They get manhandled by Domantas Sabonis and company. Plus, will Kyrie Irving be back soon? I sure hope so. And Luka Doncic continues dominating the NBA. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. My name is Marcus Barrahall. Josh is traveling for work. He's in Miami, so shout out to him. He did not have to, luckily for him, bear witness to this Nets loss. Once again, they fall to the Indiana Pacers 115-86. The Nets dropped to 5-8 on the season. Obviously, a lot went wrong in this game. If you lose by 30 or thereabouts, not a lot can go right. I'm going to break all that down. I'm going to go through that. Also, didn't talk about the Bulls game. Haven't had a podcast since then, so I'll touch on that one, although it's been a couple days now. And then bounce around the league a little bit. Talk about Kyrie Irving's injury. He sat out once again in this Pacer game after sitting out the game against the Chicago Bulls. So that's back-to-back missed games for him with that shoulder injury. Hopefully he's back soon, but I'll get more into that in a bit. Want to talk first about this Pacer game. Weird game. Started off 18-18 after the first quarter. So nothing like the Nets have played all season. Like, they've been the team that outscores teams and then more often than not gets outscored. That wasn't really the case early on in this game. The defense honestly looked really good in that first quarter. There was a lot of forcing the ball out of Domantas Sabonis' hands for the Pacers. Spencer Dinwiddie did a good job shading over and double-teaming. Jared Allen was kind of holding his own in the post early on, and the Nets defense looked really good. They led 14-6 early on. They were hitting their shots. Dinwiddie was looking aggressive offensively. The Pacers were kind of giving him space from behind the arc, and he was knocking down those open shots. And then it felt like the Nets just couldn't really buy a basket. They still had open looks in that first quarter. They just weren't really hitting them. And they were not really good from three throughout the game. 11 for 34 as a team. And really, besides Dinwiddie's 4 for 8, no one really hit any threes. So that was an area of weakness. And then once the Pacers kind of clamped down on defense, and the Nets sort of resorted back to their not usually good defense on the other end, Indiana blew things open in the second quarter, outscoring Brooklyn 41-17 in that period to take a massive lead into the half. And the Nets went on a run at the start of the third quarter. They kind of they chipped away. They got it down to as close as 12. And then there was that play where Garrett Temple had the ball. I think it was Nazemi Trulong for the Pacers was guarding him. It was a mismatch for sure. Temple had like a huge size advantage, bullied him down, looked like he very clearly like pushed off, but there was no call. The Pacers bench like stood up, and then Temple had like a wide open layup and he completely botched it. Would have cut the lead to 10. Instead, he missed it. The Pacers got the rebound, pushed it up ahead. Justin Holiday hit a three-pointer that stretched the lead to 15. So a 5-point swing. And then from there, the Nets couldn't really get back into it. They wound up completely having things blow open in the fourth quarter. And then finally, guys that Josh and I have talked about, guys like Rodions Krooks and David Nwaba actually got run. It was in the last couple minutes of a blowout, but at least they saw the court, so that's something to take positively from this game if you're a Nets fan. But there were a lot of negatives, and after a 29-point loss, you kind of have to talk about those. So I'm going to get into those. First and foremost, the rebounding. The Nets were out-rebounded 63-40 in this game, which is bad. And that led Indiana, who didn't shoot the ball great. Indiana shot 43% as a team, which is like fine. But because they got all those rebounds either on the offensive glass or just picking up so many net misses, the Nets shot 35%, which is terrible. Because of that, Indiana got 17 more shot attempts than the Nets did. So even though they weren't shooting at an elite clip, they got so many opportunities because they were crashing the glass that they kind of made up for their lack of efficiency with pure volume. So that was tough, and that was mostly Domantas Sabonis, who put up, he was like close to a double-double in the first half, and the only reason he didn't have it was because of points. It was, he had a career-high 18 rebounds in this game. I think 15 of them maybe were in the first half, and then he didn't play much down the stretch, obviously, with the blowout. But yeah, he had 5 offensive rebounds, 18 total for the game to go with 16 points, and the Pacers just looked huge in this game. They were playing Sabonis and Miles Turner together, which hasn't been the cleanest of fits, like, on the whole, but in this game, it proved really effective for Indiana. And then, even off the bench, they brought in Goga Bitadze, they brought in TJ Leaf for a couple minutes, Alize Johnson played in garbage time, but they just had way, way, way more big guys than the Nets do. The Nets, who have started to go bigger, playing Nick Claxton at the 4 spot next to DeAndre Jordan or Jared Allen at the 5, but really, like, Claxton is skinny, Jared Allen is skinny, and DeAndre looks more and more washed every game. And to see Indiana, that was starting, like, 2, honestly, all-star level in the Eastern Conference level big men in Sabonis and Miles Turner, and then bringing a guy off the bench in Goga Bitadze, who, he's a rookie, a lot like Nick Claxton, but he just seems a lot more polished defensively than Claxton, and he and the Pacers as a whole did a great job of contesting the Nets' shots at the rim. It felt like any time a Net drove to the basket in the first half, they were kind of met with that verticality. Maybe Roy Hibbert, maybe his ghost or something, taught the team that shades of Indiana Pacers pass, just standing straight up, and the Nets, particularly Jean and Musa, would just, like, drive right into them and then kind of hang, hoping to, like, stay in the air long enough that the big man would fall back to the ground and you'd have, like, an easy shot, except Musa just, like, would get swallowed every single time he tried that, and it led to a few blocks. Musa was 0-for-4 in the game, and the Pacers had 8 blocks, 2 of them from Goga, 3 from Miles Turner, 2 from Sabonis, so all 3 of those big guys made, like, huge impacts on the defensive end and kind of quieted the Nets' drives. And even a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, who's usually quick enough to get by bigger guys and finish at the basket, he got blocked once or twice around the rim. I don't know if that made the Nets more timid on drives, but it certainly, it didn't help things. Joe Harris got blocked too. He's usually a guy who, even though he's not the most explosive near the basket, he's kind of crafty enough and plays the angles well enough to not usually get blocked. He had his shot sent back once or twice. So just a lot of, like, the Nets just seem small. And there's ways to take advantage of that. Torian Prince playing at the 4, he's obviously undersized, but you would think that his shooting and his speed would be kind of the counter to that, where if you play a guy like Sabonis at the 4 against a guy like Torian Prince, yeah, Sabonis can kind of back him down on offense and make Prince look small. But then on the other end, you would think that Prince could either hit threes in Sabonis' face where he's not as comfortable playing defense out on the perimeter, or if Prince catches it in space and can kind of dribble drive past him and get to the basket, he can use his speed to exploit him. Well, that didn't happen in this game. Prince was 3-for-11 from the field, 1-of-3 from three-point land, and then on his drives, it felt like he couldn't really get past Sabonis. And I don't know if part of that was because they were usually playing Sabonis at the 4, so there was, like, another big guy inside where even if you got past Sabonis, you still had to contend with that bigger guy, and maybe that made Prince kind of pull up a little bit on those drives and slow down and look to kick it back out. But I just did not like what I saw from him in this game. I thought that he had a really bad game. Really, the only Net who played well was Spencer Dinwiddie, who had 28 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. He looked phenomenal, and he was really the only guy who could create a shot for the Nets, especially in the early going, with Kyrie Irving out, with Caris LeVert out, with Theo Pinson struggling from the field. He was also 3-for-11. The Nets just don't really have any playmakers right now besides Dinwiddie, and they really, really need Kyrie to come back, like, as soon as possible, because they just can't create anything. And this offense that looked clunky but still, like, high scoring in the first couple games of the season is still clunky but is no longer high scoring. They're just not connecting on open shots. They're not maybe not getting passes in rhythm, that kind of thing. But yeah, the offense just hasn't flowed as well without Kyrie Irving in the lineup. And that's why, to me, I've seen a lot of people talking, especially after the Nets won that Bulls game without Kyrie, people doing that classic thing of like, oh, maybe because Kyrie is out, they are playing better, they're more unified, that kind of thing. I don't buy into that. I think that this Nets team especially like really needs Kyrie Irving to create, especially with Caris LeVert out, just because the way the things stand right now, like for them to compete, Dinwiddie has to be playing a ton of minutes and he has to be on his A game. Whereas if Kyrie's playing, it's fine. If Dinwiddie has an off game, if Caris LeVert is playing, the same thing, there's more margin for error. Right now, they're basically relying on Dinwiddie to give them 25 and 6 every single game, which he basically did in this game, and they still lost by 30. So way too much pressure on Dinwiddie right now. Theo Pinson did not do a good job. There were some positives, though, from this game. I'm going to talk about those quickly because it's hard to find a ton, again, in a blowout like this. But I thought Iman Shumpert's energy was really good off the bench, and you would not know it from looking at the box score. He had 3 points on 1 of 5 shooting, committed 4 fouls in 19 minutes, and was a minus 16. So literally every single stat would tell you that he was bad. But just watching the game, I thought that his deflections, he had a nice steal that set them up in transition. He almost had a second play that turned into a turnover. Nate McMillan challenged it and won on an out-of-bounds play on the side. But I just thought that the way that he was kind of sprinting around, it reminded me a lot of the old Shumpert, where he looks kind of out of control on defense and like he's just flying around from place to place, but he's always able to kind of stop on a dime and turn back and recover when he does take those gambles. So despite the box score, I thought his defensive energy was much needed, especially in that third quarter run. It was kind of him and Dinwiddie on offense and Shumpert on defense leading the charge in that respect. So I liked that. I liked Dinwiddie stepping up, like I mentioned, and really he's turned it around completely from where he was those first couple games of the season, where it felt like every play he had was either an ISO into a bad step-back jumper or a drive where he threw an errant lob to DeAndre Jordan that was just not close to anything. So he looks a lot better in this game. He had some nice touch passes to Jared Allen. And for as much as he handled the ball in those 33 minutes, to only have 3 turnovers was a good sign as well. So hopefully he can keep this going once Kyrie Irving comes back and then eventually once Caris LeVert comes back, because for this team to like reach the level that I think Josh and I expected them to reach, which is that like 45, 46, 47 win range and kind of within striking distance of the second round of the playoffs, they need at least 2 of those guys to be clicking at once. And so if Dinwiddie can be more consistent, more reliable off the bench, especially once he's back to going against second unit guys, as opposed to right now where he's kind of going against starters and having to be the number one option, if he can kind of keep this momentum going, that'll be a good sign long-term for the Nets, because we know what Kyrie's going to bring once he's back healthy, and Caris LeVert, hopefully that'll take some pressure off him if Dinwiddie's more consistent. So positive sign, at least in that respect. And then I mentioned the defense early on. It was really good. Hopefully that level of communication is something that they can look back to, that Kenny can point to, because it wasn't just that the Pacers were missing shots early. It was that the Nets were gang rebounding. They were clearly recognizing what the issues were the first time they played this team earlier in the season, where they just got killed on the glass and Sabonis kind of ate them up inside. They were doubling him, forcing the ball out of his hands, and then everyone was crashing the glass. And then they kind of just abandoned that after the first quarter. So I did want to at least mention that things did start off well defensively in this game. So hopefully that's something that they can try to capture, put that in a bottle, and try to, again, put together like a complete game, which they haven't really done this season. Like 4 quarters of good basketball on both sides, they have not done. So we still need to see that. Hopefully that comes in the game on Wednesday against Charlotte. But I wanted to talk a little bit about 2 guys who I mentioned earlier who have kind of been in the doghouse for Kenny Atkinson, Rodion Skrukić and David Nwaba, sort of for different reasons. I think Nwaba more so just hasn't gotten a shot, and I think Kurucs had a shot and just hasn't been playing well, and so Kenny took him out of the rotation, and now it's kind of hard for him to earn that spot back, especially because he was mostly playing the backup 4 to Prince, and now it seems like Claxton is playing that role, which is like a little bit out of position, but Claxton has played well, and he hasn't really done anything to lose those minutes. So for Rhodey, I think his minutes would probably, and the same goes for Nwaba, those minutes would probably come at the expense of a guy like Garrett Temple or DeAndre Jordan if you want to slide Claxton more towards the five. I think that Temple has definitely provided some stability, at least, just being like a veteran presence who is a capable outside shooter, but he's doing, especially now with Kyrie out, way more than he should be asked to do. Like, he's taking step back threes, he's curling off picks like he's Joe Harris, and it's just not his game at all. He needs to be a guy who is, like, at best the fourth option offensively on the court at a given time, and there were times in this game where he was, like, the number two or even number one option when Dinwiddie was sitting, so that can't happen. And I think that Nwaba's defense is kind of what Shumpert provided in this game. Like, I think if Nwaba was given more of a chance and more run, he could do what Shumpert did in this game, like, pretty easily. He could go 1 for 5, you know? That's not asking too much. And he could definitely provide that intensity on defense. And then for Rhodey, I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's in his head or if it's, like, a focus thing, but there was a sequence in this Pacer game where he came in late and it was garbage time. The game was out of hand already. There was a pick-and-roll play where he was defending the ball. Claxton was defending the roll man. I think it was Miles Turner. And Turner slipped the screen, and you could tell that Rhodey was supposed to slip with him and kind of cover him, but instead he stayed on the ball, which Claxton was also guarding, and that left an easy pass for Aaron Holiday to make right to Miles Turner rolling to the basket for a dunk. Kenny Atkinson called timeout and just seemed, like, pissed at Rhodey. And then on replay, you could see, like, as soon as Rhodey stayed with Holiday and didn't make the correct switch on defense, Claxton kind of, like, rolled his eyes and, like, put his hands up. The play was still going on, but he recognized, like, oh, this is over. Like, the guy's a wide-open dunk now. And that happened, and then you saw him talking a little bit to Goga Bitadze. Not really sure what that was about. They were exchanging words, nothing too crazy, but just, like, the lapse on defense paired with the fact that he might be focused on, like, talking trash to another guy in a 30-point game, it just is not a good look. And he did have some nice plays on offense. Like, he had one pretty easy, like, pump fake from the 3-point line on the wing, drive to the basket for, like, a very easy dunk, showing off his length, his grace, and his speed. Like, when he is able to get a step on the defense and take that head of steam into the basket, he's still really effective offensively. But if he's not playing any defense, he's not as reliable a shooter as a guy like Torian Prince, like, there's no real point in having him out there. So I think for Rhodey, he needs to refocus on what got him minutes in the first place last year, which was his energy and his defensive intensity. He's a guy who is crazy long, and he can get into passing lanes, he can create all kinds of havoc and get steals and things like that, and leaking out in transition. Those kinds of plays are what I think he needs to focus on. But at the same time, he does still need a shot to do those things. It can't just all be in practice. And that's kind of where I am with Nwaba too. I want to see those guys get more minutes, get more run. Not that I'm not loving what I'm seeing from the guys who've kind of taken their spot, like Nick Claxton, but I think that it would probably, like I mentioned, have to cut Garrett Temple's minutes down, maybe consider cutting DeAndre Jordan's minutes down, even though he's not playing a ton of minutes as is, but he just hasn't looked great these last couple games. He's kind of, like, late on closeouts. He's not stepping out on shooters. Like, just little things that I don't know how, like, engaged he is or not, but it just doesn't look great. So hopefully Nwaba and Kurucs can get some more minutes going forward. And then in that Bulls game, just to talk quickly about that, that was a nice win for Brooklyn. It was a game that Dinwiddie, of course, playing his former team, he had to take over down the stretch. I believe he had 20 of his 24 points in the fourth quarter to lead the Nets on that 117-111 victory. So that, like, kind of evened out their road trip a little bit, brought them to 2-3 on the trip. Just a nice solid win, nothing crazy. Good to see Dinwiddie attacking the basket, 15 free throw attempts. That's exactly what you want, and he's really stepped up in these two games without Kyrie Irving. So again, just, like, hoping he can keep that going when everyone's back healthy, and that he doesn't recede when given less of a role. Because obviously he's proving right now that if given the opportunity, he can step up and do more. But when he's asked to go back to that six-man role, hopefully he's still able to produce and contribute without necessarily getting into that groove that he's in right now. So wanted to talk about that. Joe Harris, 8 assists in that game. That's exactly what they need from him if Kyrie's going to be out and Caris LeVert's going to be out, because, like I just said, they couldn't really have they couldn't really find anyone in this Pacer game to create shots for others besides Spencer Dinwiddie. So having a guy like Joe Harris, who has that Team USA experience, he's a guy who has been around. He's a good passer. He's not like the quickest or the best ball handler, but if he's like coming around on a curl and he's hit like with a head of steam, he has the intelligence and the ability to like make the right pass in that situation to find an open guy. So good to see him spreading the ball around. Hopefully things can get back on track for him with Kyrie Irving hopefully returning for this Hornets game on Wednesday. No updates on him as of me recording this, so hopefully he's back in the fold for Brooklyn for that game. And then just quickly jumping around the league, there was some other cool stuff today. The biggest thing that caught my eye was Luka Doncic in the Mavs-Spurs game. Just an absolutely insane game. 42 points, 11 rebounds, 12 assists, and just the second guy younger than 21 years old to put up a 40-point triple-double joining LeBron James. He's just been incredible this season, and I am like at a loss for words to describe his play. He looks so calm, so cool, so collected, and the step back he hit to seal that game just looked so smooth. It looked like a shot that I've seen LeBron take so many times on the wing, and that's really like the closest comp that I can have for him right now is LeBron James. And it's a little bit different because Luka isn't coming at it from as like overpowering as LeBron is now, or even like at his more like slimmer athletic peak where he was just kind of flying past guys. Luka's much more like, he's athletic, but it's more like a James Harden athletic where it's about deceleration, it's about the handles, the craftiness, the footwork, as opposed to just like pure speed and leaping ability. But just in terms of impact on the game, it's very LeBron-like, especially on the offensive end, where he is always going to make the right play. There was that game, that classic game against the Lakers earlier this season, the overtime game where he kicked it. I forget to who he passed it to, but he made like a pass when it was down to the last shot, as opposed to taking the shot himself. And that's a play that, in like the pre-LeBron as the best player in the league era, a superstar making that kind of decision would have been really criticized, like especially if the guy misses the shot. But now, I think, like, basketball minds have kind of like advanced to a point where you think about the process as opposed to just the result. And so you would rather have a guy who's maybe like a 37% shooter from three taking a wide open three as opposed to Luka or some other star forcing a contested one. Even though the guy's not as good of a player, if the shot is better, it can be a net positive. So I just love what I've seen from Luka. I'm really excited for the Nets to play the Mavs. Unfortunately, that won't happen until January 2nd, and then Dallas doesn't come to Brooklyn for their game until April. So maybe I'll try to go to that game in April. That would be really cool. I've never seen like someone that young and that talented like up close like that. And then, of course, to see Porzingis back in New York would be very interesting, I'm sure, even at Barclays Center. But yeah, there's a lot going on in the league. Hopefully the Nets can right the ship coming up. Hopefully Kyrie Irving comes back soon because he's got his revenge tour coming up. The Nets have these games against Charlotte and Sacramento on Wednesday and Friday. But then after that, they play the Knicks, the Cavs, and then a home-and-home against the Celtics. So all four of those games from the 24th to the 29th are going to be like very, very charged environments. You got Knicks-Nets, you got Kyrie returning to where he won a title, and then returning to where he very famously did not win a title. So a lot going on for him. Hopefully he's able to get back healthy for those games, and hopefully the Nets can steal one from this very resurgent Charlotte team before that. You know, Charlotte's played really well. Shout out to Devontae Graham. That's going to do it on this episode of Locked On Nets. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading, tweeting at us, all that good stuff. Josh should be back soon. He's just been very busy with work this time of year. We'll have a podcast for you very soon. Follow us at Locked On Nets. Follow Josh at JMBass_. I'm at Marcus Barahal on Twitter. Yeah, and we'll be in your ears again soon. Until next time, be well. Bye.